I got the call from Vancouver, Jacob said. Our man in the port. Our ship has come in. The delay was about weather in the Luzon Strait. Where's that? Jasper asked. Where the South China Sea meets the Pacific Ocean. But now our goods have arrived. They're here. Our truck could be rolling tonight. Tomorrow morning at the very latest.
That's good, Jasper said.
Is it? Why wouldn't it be? You were worried before, in case the stranger got nailed before the delay went away. You said that would prove us liars.
True.
But now that problem is gone, is it? Seems to me that problem has merely turned itself inside out. Suppose the truck gets here before the stranger gets nailed. That would prove us liars, too.
We could hold the truck up there.
We couldn't. We're a transportation company, not a storage company. We have no facilities.
So what do?
We think. That's what we do.
Where is that guy?
We don't know. We know he hasn't slept or eaten since yesterday. We know we've had our boys out driving the roads all morning, and they haven't seen a damn thing, so where is he? Jonas Duncan said, either he's snuck in a chicken coop somewhere, or he's out walking the fields.
Exactly, Jacob said.
I think it's time to turn our boys off the nice, smooth roads. I think it's time they drove out across the land. Big circles, sweeping and beating.
We only have 7 of them left. They all have cell phones.
First sight of the guy, they can call the boys from the south and turn the problem over to the professionals. If they need to, that is. Or at least they can get some coordinated action going. Let's turn them loose. By that point, Reacher was starting to hurry. He was about 400 yards due west of the 3 Duncan houses, which was about as close as he intended to get. He was walking parallel to the road. He could already see the wooden buildings ahead. They were tiny brown pinpricks on the far horizon. Nothing between him and them. Flat land. He was watching for trucks. He knew they would be coming. By now, his hunters would have checked the roads and found nothing. Therefore, they would have concluded he was traveling cross-country. They would be putting trucks in the fields. And soon, if they hadn't already. It was predictable. Fast, mobile patrol, cell phone communications, maybe even radios, the whole 9 yards. Not good. He slogged onward, another 5 minutes, then 10, then 20. The 3 Duncan houses fell away behind his shoulder. The wooden buildings up ahead stayed resolutely on the horizon, but they got a little larger because they were getting a little closer. 400 yards away was another bramble thicket, spreading wide and chest high. But apart from that, there was nothing in sight taller than an inch. Reacher was dangerously exposed, and he knew it. In Las Vegas, a Lebanese man named Safir took out his phone and dialed a number. The call was answered 6 blocks away by an Italian man named Rossi. There were no pleasantries, no time for any. The first thing Safir said was,
"You're making me angry."
Rossi said nothing in reply. He couldn't really afford to. It was a question of protocol. He was absolutely at the top of his own particular tree, and it was a big tree, high, wide, and handsome, with roots and branches spreading everywhere. But there were bigger trees in the forest, and Safir's was one of them. Safir said,
"I favored you with my business."
Rossi said, "And I'm grateful for that."
"But now, you're embarrassing me," Safir said,
which, Rossi thought, was a mistake. It was an admission of weakness. It made it clear that, however big Safir was, he was worried about someone bigger still. A food chain thing. At the bottom were the Duncans, then came Rossi, then came Safir, and at the top came someone else. It didn't matter who. The mere existence of such a person put Safir and Rossi in the same boat. For all their graduated wealth and power and glory, they were both intermediaries, both scufflers. Common cause. Rossi said,
You know that merchandise of this quality is hard to source.
Sophia said, I expect promises to be kept.
So do I. We're both victims here. The difference between us is that I'm doing something about it. I got boots on the ground up in Nebraska.
What's the problem there?
They claim a guy is poking around.
What? A cop?
No, Rossi said. Absolutely not a cop. The chain is as secure as ever. Just a passerby, that's all, a stranger.
Who?
Nobody, just a busybody.
So, how is this nobody, busybody stranger holding things up?
I don't think he is, really. I think they're lying to me. I think they're just making excuses. They're late, that's all.
Unsatisfactory.
I agree. But this is a seller's market.
Who have you got up there?
Two of my boys.
I'm going to send two of mine.
No point, Rossi said. I'm already taking care of it.
Not to Nebraska, you idiot,
Sophia said.
I'm going to send two of my boys across town to babysit you, to keep the pressure on. I want you to be very aware of what happens to people who let me down.
The Port of Vancouver had been combined with the Fraser River Port Authority and the North Fraser Port Authority, and the shiny new three-in-one business had been renamed Port Metro Vancouver. It was the largest port in Canada, the largest port in the Pacific Northwest, the fourth largest port on the west coast of North America, and the fifth largest port in North America overall. It occupied 375 miles of coastline and had 25 separate terminals and handled 3,000 vessel arrivals every year for a total annual cargo throughput of 100 million tons, which averaged out to considerably more than 250,000 tons every day. Almost all of those tons were packed into intermodal shipping containers, which, like a lot of things, trace their origins all the way back to United States Department of Defense drawings made in the 1950s. Because in the 1950s, the U.S. DOD had been one of the few agencies in the world with the will and the energy to make drawings at all, and the only one with the power to make them stick.